Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I'm investigating what I call a spiritually emerging culture. And there's been different series I've done on this show, one on UFOs, one on sexuality, one on shamanism. And if you listen to the archives at bbsradio.com or on my website, newrealities.com, you can hear those series of different talks by different people. Tonight we're going to explore creativity, and I have an artist with me. Her name is Sloat Shaw. And this will really be along the lines I've been following about the nature of creativity, who are we as creative beings, and what does it mean that humans have this ability to express themselves and this need and this desire, and where does that come from? Okay, Sloat, are you with me?
I am. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, so I've been really interested in this passion that all human beings have to express themselves for whatever reason, and somehow I feel the artist is able to do that in a new... There's an expression that comes from artists, and we're all artists, but artists who call themselves artists do it in an original way. I think that's what I'm trying to say. What do you say about this human need to express ourselves?
I think it's something very deep in everybody. And what I've discovered is that people often feel that they can't draw, they can't paint. And I teach those people because I find that there's no one who can't draw or can't paint. There's access to every aspect of art. I know about painting and drawing, but I have seen people who say they absolutely would never be able to draw anything, draw beautifully, once they can tap into this part of themselves.
Well, that's what I feel. I mean, it's like training the hand and the eye to go together, but I've tried drawing, and I just feel like I don't have the skill in somehow translating what I'm seeing to making that appear on the paper. So how would you, what do you tap into? What place to get people to make?
I actually had stopped drawing as a child, which I found was a common thing with people around fourth grade. I stopped drawing because of just criticism and just kind of withdrawing inside of myself. And when I relearned to draw again after the birth of my daughter, I found that I had to relearn how to see. And that's what I found was the secret to learning to draw. You're right about seeing being important. You actually have to engage a whole other part of yourself. It's not just engaging the right brain, which is really helpful. I love that book, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. But
right.
You also have to bring your whole self into an awareness of who you are. And that's the part that I found made even greater leap forward.
And were you saying awareness of who we are from the non-ego part of ourselves? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know if it's ego or non-ego, but I know that there is a state of what athletes call flow when they can just tap into a perfect pitch, or Tiger Woods talking about, you know, making that hole in one. And there, it's kind of like a time without time, and that you just start to be in a present moment that seems almost hyper-real. But I did notice, and all my students report the same thing, that your vision changes once you learn to draw. It's like you've tapped into something secret, and you can see how a line goes around a head. And shortly after I learned how to draw, I found myself playing tennis, and my kids had always laughed at me because I really couldn't play tennis. And I could see the arc of the ball, and I was right there every second to return the ball. And that was tapping into the exact same thing as learning to draw, but it was just seeing that line of the ball.
Wow, that's great that art can improve your tennis game.
And, they should be putting it in more schools again.
But I'm trying to, because when you're in that state, that altered state, and you told me you don't pick up a paintbrush until you sort of enter an altered state, but you don't stay there when you come back into this normal state of awareness, right?
Right. I mean,
but,
well,
yeah, go ahead.
I think I was talking about two different things.
Okay.
Because I've done so much teaching, especially people who are either stuck, artists who are stuck come to me, and also people who can't draw anything. So I was talking about their ability to draw. Then what I've done in my own work is I've actually kind of expanded on entering into a place where you can draw what you see before you, because when I'm drawing, I'm not drawing what I see before me. I don't know what I'm drawing. I just allow, I paint over a series of months the same painting, and I paint lots of thin layers of glaze, and I meditate, and I connect with the earth, I connect with the heavens, I do qigong, and then I just allow energy to flow out my hand and go on to the canvas. And so each time I'm looking at it, and sometimes a part of me is a little disappointed because I'm painting out something I've spent months doing, but I find myself just pouring paint over the entire canvas to get it to the next better stage.
But you're saying two different things in a sense, where you're just letting the, so I mean, because I think what you just said is it's not about seeing at all, it's just about feeling. I mean,
well, that's why I separated it into two different spaces. The first one is drawing right before you something, you know, like a portrait or a still life or landscape. The second part is allowing the flow to happen in your body, and you allow the flow to happen in that part, and that's how you can see differently. So what I've done over all of these years of painting, I've been painting a long time now, and as the painting unfolds, there's probably a part of me that can make it look, there's probably some skilled part that I'm engaging, because there's a lot of hand-eye coordination, which is what you were talking about before, and what
yeah.
I mentioned, yeah, with the tennis ball or learning how to draw initially, you move through a kind of a block of hand-eye coordination, is my understanding. And then this other place where I enter into a really is kind of a transformative experience that I'm feeling, of just seeing what will come out from the painting. It's as if the painting is unfolding out of paint, and I just kind of see it and feel it, but I'm not aware of what the painting is going to be until it's done. It does have a feeling state and an energy state.
Mm-hmm. And then do you feel like you're, like you maybe said before, you're sort of channeling something, like a higher consciousness that wants to come through you?
Well, I feel this huge energy, and sometimes my whole body will be tingling, and there'll be just this incredible focus, and sometimes almost an ecstatic feeling. I mean, really, it's a really pleasurable feeling to just be allowing the paint to unfold. And there aren't any words, and I almost don't have any knowledge. I look at the paintings. I love seeing them when they're up in shows, because I can remember how I got there, but I'm surprised how I got there. I could never have thought of that painting.
Do you know this woman, Mariel Gold, this English woman?
No, I don't.
It sounds like she does very much the same thing that you're doing. She's coming to Omega, and she has a website called Drawn Home.
Uh-huh.
Exploration to the nature of creativity through life drawing, and it'd be interesting. I'm going to do a show with her at some point. It'd be interesting if you met her, because she guides people to this very intuitive way of drawing, of just figure drawing, life drawing. Anyway, it sounded familiar because someone just told me today about this woman, and now I'm talking to you about this. So could you get us into this state, I mean, without having to paint? I mean, can you kind of...
I could if you would like to.
I'd like to experience that.
All right. It's a state that's very similar to just any kind of meditative state, but I'll walk you through as if... I've never done this on the telephone. I was going to say, as if you were my student, what I have been doing for a number of years is teaching... I've taught both kids and college students and actually a room full of therapists in Cambridge, Massachusetts, this process. And what I do is I show prints of my paintings, kind of gets you in an altered state, and then I lead people through meditation, this meditation that I'm going to do with you on the phone. And then at the end of it, with my students, I give them sticks and ink, diluted ink and thick ink and pieces of paper, and I allow them to draw from this state, and then we look at it and talk about the pieces after, kind of come back into a regular. So that's how I've used it.
What do you ask them to draw when you when they draw?
Nothing. Whatever comes out. And that's what's been very interesting. One of my students in a fourth grade class in Framingham was scheduled to be put into the retarded class, and he was so eloquent when he looked at my paintings and talked about them, and then did the meditation and then talked about his drawing so beautifully that the teacher had him tested for gifted, and he was placed in the gifted class rather than the retarded class.
Wow. I think art is so important. I mean, people so much undervalue the importance of art. And I think art is what's giving us our human abilities.
I think art is very important, and I find that people hunger to draw. I really find that as important as having food.
I'm always doodling, always just making these little line drawings that are just abstract lines. I mean, I don't know where they come from or why I do them, but they sort of keep me calm. Okay, so I'm ready.
Okay, so here's what I'd like, because if there are people listening who have who are doing this meditation with us, I'd like actually to have right near your hand a piece of paper and a pen.
Okay.
Put it down. Usually we'd have ink and sticks. But just have it there. And what I'm going to do is just take you into the meditation and then allow the meditation to come up. And then you can just draw a little with the sticks. Now, when I'm teaching, nobody talks when they're drawing.
Okay.
So you have to give this a big grain of salt, because this is such a kind of humorous way of doing it on the radio.
Well, I know, but it's to give people an experience a little bit. Or I want to experience it. So.
Okay, so what I'd like you to do, Alan, is first I have people kind of feel where they are. So stand up and just kind of wiggle around your feet, kind of stamp them down, and then just kind of stamp it and sit down in the chair kind of deliberately. Take your feet and your hands and your neck and squish them really, 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 really tight. Release. And take your head and neck and shoulders and hands and body and squish, and release. And one more time, squish yourself up. Every single aspect of you, make yourself as wrinkled as if you've been in the tub for 5 hours. Tight, and release.
Yes.
Take a breath in again. Another one, that was good, and let it out with a sigh. And another breath in. And let it out. And feel yourself now in this place. Feel your bottom on the chair and your feet on the floor. Feel your hands, feel your neck and your head, and just feel yourself resting in this time and in this place. And from the bottoms of your feet, feel thick cords going down through your shoes and through the floor, through the basement, through the rock and the earth, and right down into the very heart of the earth itself. And feel those cords from the bottoms of your feet and one from the base of your spine anchor into the heart of the earth, and just feel it connect with a little tug, a little kiss, something with the heart of the earth. And just imagine, if you don't feel it, imagine yourself connecting with the earth. And when I say feel, you can always substitute the words imagine, so I'm just going to do that. And feel the earth responding to the cords you've sent down, and feel at the speed of light those cords being revitalized, and feel the energy from the earth going up into the bottoms of your feet. Imagine, feel your feet tingling with energy. Feel your ankles tingling with energy. And feel that energy moving up into your calves and into your knees. Feel that tingle of beautiful red energy. Feel it moving over your thighs, and feel that cord from the base of your spine filling with red energy. And feel your whole bottom pelvic bowl filled with red energy, and breathe that energy up and down from the earth. And as you breathe it in and breathe it out, feel how natural it feels to you just to be connected with the Great Mother. And feel that red energy filling that whole pelvic bowl, and feel it moving up and turning into brilliant orange, the red energy from below and the orange energy filling your whole lower belly, and feel it bathing all the soft organs, red energy and orange energy, and feeling moving up your spine, red energy and orange energy. Feel that red and orange energy moving up into your belly and filling with a beautiful yellow. Bathe all of the soft organs of your body right around your belly in yellow energy, red and orange and yellow. And as those energies move, they can mingle in color, but just notice how brilliant, beautiful, and clear these colors are. Feel the red and orange and yellow moving up your spine, moving up into your chest, filling with a beautiful, vibrant green. Feel your heart fill with green energy. Feel the red energy from below and the orange and the yellow and the green filling your heart and lungs. Breathe it in and breathe it out. Let that green energy move up over your shoulders, down your arms and wrists and fingers. And feel the red energy from below and the orange and yellow and green move up your spine, hitting your body, relaxing it. And feel it move up into your throat and bathe it with a brilliant blue. Feel it swirl around your throat. Feel the red, the orange, the yellow, the green moving up your body inside and out, moving up into your throat and into your jaw. And feel your jaw release and fill with beautiful blue energy. Feel the energy moving up into your nose and inside of your head, filling up and moving up into your eyes and turning into wonderful violet energy, red energy below and orange and yellow, green and blue and filling with violet. And feel the inside of your head filling with beautiful blue and violet colors, and bathing your eyes with soft colors. And feel the top of your head tingle and open, and feel the white light from above fill your head with beautiful energy. And the white light is every color there is. So allow the white light to move and go down into your head and ears, nose and eyes, down into your mouth and throat, into your shoulder and arms and wrists and fingers and chest and belly and pelvis and thighs and knees and calves and ankles and feet. And feel yourself held in two flows of energy, one from below and one from above. And breathe in this gift of energy that is you, and breathing it in and breathing it out. Allow yourself to put the energy in any spot of your body that needs any help. And sometimes it's nice to put your hand on any part of the body that just feels like it needs extra energy, and direct more energy to go there and relax. And as you fill yourself up with energy, allow the energy to fill your body so much that it's filling every part of you and it's seeping out of the pores of your skin. And allow the energy to fill you from below and from above and seep out of your skin, and just feel how the energy seeps out in a beautiful, beautiful glow all around you. And as you breathe in and breathe out, you can kind of imagine where the energy might need a little extra energy when it's seeping out, and either put your hand there or just imagine at that spot more energy is coming out, so that there's energy out in the front of you, in the back of you, on the top of you, and below. And you're fed by these flows of energy from the earth and the heavens. And breathing in and breathing out, picture the left side of your brain as an L moving up and down, kind of like a straight L moving up and down in a grid on the left side of your brain. And picture on the right side of your brain a beautiful R with curlicues and flowers and ribbons, and it's dancing in circles. And see the R moving around on its side and beautiful flows of movement, and the L just going up and down and back and forward. And see the R dancing and whirling, and see the R move over into the L spot and nudge the L into the R spot. And now the L has sprouted beautiful flowers and ribbons and all sorts of delightful things, and it's dancing in the R spot, and the R is in the L spot, and it's dancing in the L spot, and they each dance around and just kind of enjoy. And pick up the pen that's there by your hand, and with that pen, just draw anything that comes out, and just put it on the page, and just allow it to move around. Let it go with however you want it to be. And then just enjoy the feeling of being in your body with your hand and in an expanded space.
Okay.
And then at the end of that, I have people finish off whatever their drawing is and take their hands and rub them together. And rub their hands, actually it's at the end of the meditation, before you pick up the pencil and the pen.
Okay.
And you rub your hands together and rub your eyes open and just pat your body back.
Well, I picked up the pen and I feel like I just started drawing these little circles. And I mean, it doesn't look like any, it's just like a circle inside of a circle, which sometimes I've drawn before, but I feel like my hand moving slower now. I feel more attention to the details of something. I mean, I guess it's not supposed to look like anything, right?
Well, it's a little different doing it with a pen, because a pen doesn't offer you the same experience
I see. Yeah.
A stick, which is an ink, flowing ink, is like totally, you can't do it right, and also you draw for about another 20 minutes, and we only did a minute, and
right.
Because we didn't want quiet space on the radio.
Right.
And you just allow it to flow, and what I do in a classroom where I'm actually teaching, which I just call beginning drawing, we look at a cup, a white cup on a white saucer on a white background, and we draw that. Oh, no, we draw a white block, the beginning. And what happens is people can draw and actually have it be realistic, and then we draw a little bit later without the meditation, and then the brain can see what the difference is between doing the meditation and without, because I have a student who studied Vipassana meditation for like 20 years, and she did this amazing drawing the first time out, and she spent the entire rest of the semester trying to get back to be as good as her first drawing, because once she saw how wonderful it was, she just wanted, her brain wanted to do it, but she didn't know that she could do it. And she, when you're drawing, you don't even know that it's coming out wonderful. So look at this.
So did you sort of helped merge the left and right side of the brain?
Right.
That's what it feels like. And it's a very peaceful state. Anyway, I feel very calm.
Well, we have so much of the right brain. Scientists have done a lot of investigation that there are really large portions of the right brain that are just not utilized. And I started looking into this basic meditation. It's an adaptation from drawing on the right side of the brain that I just expanded. But my son had a dyslexic form, and so and I was teaching at Lesley College teachers, and so I wanted to help them use this with dyslexic students, and I started to find out how much of the brain wasn't used.
What's it there? Is it, what is that unused? I mean, obviously, it's there for a reason. What is it there for?
Well, there's a lot of controversy about that. A lot of more enlightened thinkers, like, you know, Fritz Schaff, Capra, and things like that, Deepak Chopra, talk about the use of the brain for a lot of meditative states that we are very busy with, and our left brain is the way that we're trained in school. And we, if you notice, when we cut funding for schools, we often cut things that are right brain. We cut music, we cut art, even gym would be a right brain thing because we don't value that kind of learning.
But we should, because it's what really keeps us healthy and whole and connected. But do you think the role of the artist is to perceive greater realities than we normally think are here? I mean,
I think that's a great way to put it, because I think that especially right now in the 21st century, I think we move at such a rapid pace that we don't see very well in our everyday life. We kind of have blinders on, like a horse with blinders. We kind of walk very busily that only work is important, only certain functions are important, and we don't have access to a great deal of things that are extremely important, like breathing and relating to every being that we walk by as a really important part of our reality.
So how would art help us relate to these other people?
Well, I find that when you're in a place of maybe merging right and left brain, you see each person as a mirror to you. If you walk down the street, like, everybody is a mirror. There's nobody that's not involved in your world. It's just reality. And sometimes it surprises me when people don't notice that we're all the same. And we get divided off into camps of, you know, whatever the political statement might be or whatever the religious statement. And I find that there's an intensity to block out deeper perception when people go into a more fundamentalist viewpoint. It seems like that's a little bit like closing themselves off into a very narrow path. And I think that art opens up the path so that you walk in a huge expanse of light that's all around you and that's within you, and you walk in a different way through the world. You're aware that this is a very great gift to be on the earth, and I don't think you can treat the earth in a bad way when you're like that.
Right. I mean, the deeper perception is that artistic inspiration. You know, and I think when people are taught left brain survival mechanism, they forget that there is this deeper way of being. And I think we said it earlier when we were talking, that the creator, the part of us that's the creator, that divine part in us, is that deeper part. I mean, that ability to tap into the creator within is tapping into the spiritual aspect, the eternal aspect. So, I mean, people like, you know, Henry Bergson, do you know his theories?
I don't.
About art as intuition. And he's just saying this ability to express is, what I get is what he's saying is nature coming through humans. It's that deeper consciousness making itself flow through the human vehicle, which is what I think the artist connects to.
Right.
That's why it's subconscious, but in a way, because, well, like your landscapes, when I'm looking at your paintings, there are these huge, incredible, almost abstract landscapes. I mean, where do those come from? Do those exist in some plane, in some spiritual dimension, do you think? I mean, are they...
Well, I've had people tell me. I've had different energetic masters come and look at my work. And I remember people saying that somebody had said that these are the Akashic records. And I remember when I asked Abraham a question, she said that I was painting the vibrational escrow of the earth. And I kind of laughed because, you know, who knows what that means.
Right.
But I thought it's as literal as the Akashic records. And she said to me that you can't really put words on your painting because they're vibrational, and that when people are in the vicinity of the vibration, that they can see them, they understand them, and they go into a very deep place with them. And they feel like they pass out of my hand because, you know, I'll be with 10 people and I'll all have a different experience with them.
Right. So do you feel then when you're painting, you're a vehicle for a higher power that wants to express something beyond this plane?
Well, the healer in Bali, Chokra Deray, had read my body when he was doing a healing on me, and he said that I have the energy of the earth that I'm painting, and then he started describing the earth, and he talked about it like it was the way that I always have felt about the paintings, that I do feel this really deep connection with the earth. I feel like the earth doesn't have a voice. And in order for us to be living on the earth, we need to have a higher consciousness of how we act toward the earth. And so that feels to me a very important part, because we're almost like we are throwing garbage into our own system constantly by ignoring the earth.
So you're drawing the vibratory kind of feelings of the earth. The earth is speaking to us through your pictures.
I think so. And other people have seen other energies, but I'm not really. All I know is that they feel different. I don't have the awareness of anything except that I allow myself to empty of slowed and just allow painting to come in. And I don't have the words, but they do feel like, they do feel like very powerful things. And actually, now that I think about it, I have a painting, I don't know if you can see, After the Flood, Day 29.
Oh, you sent that to me. Yes, that's like a Turner or something.
Right. The one I sent was day 25, and then the one was that I'm talking about is day 29. That's on the website, and it's an orange painting. And I actually saw that energy.
You saw that energy that you painted?
Right. And I saw it 9 months before I painted. I saw it on a boat in the harbor of off of Mexico, and I saw it at sunset. I always like to get up at sunset and sunrise. Sunrise and sunset are very important to me. I like to honor it each
at the
day.
Time of the flood series. Is that the one?
It's after the flood, day 29. It's orange. It's in the flood series.
After the flood series, I thought I'm looking
after
at
the flood, and it's day 29.
I'm looking at day 7, day 31, day 29. Yes.
So
wow.
That energy was this huge, enormous energy I saw on the water, and it was so huge that there was a runner standing next to me, and I said, "Look at that," and he said, "Oh, that's lightning." And I said, "No, there's the lightning." And I pointed to this tiny speck. And then he said, "Oh," I said, "it's amazing." He said, "Oh, it's the lights of the boat." I said, "Look, these are the lights of the boat." And they were tiny specks. And it was this huge, huge energy filling the entire sky. And then he looked at it again, and he turned to me, and he said, "I don't see anything." And he left. And I thought that that was a very good metaphor for turning off actual seeing. I mean, that was literally in the sky. And I always remember how he looked and he said, "And I don't want to see anything," is also what he said, as well as he didn't see anything. And it was this refusal. And I think it goes back to the point when you were talking about maybe what an artist sees, is that you let in things that can feel a little threatening and scary, because it was enormous energy, and there was no words that could say how that energy got there. It didn't make any sense.
So, yeah, I think my theory is that the artist shows us things that the normal person doesn't not even aware of. The artist cognizes a reality that so other people can recognize it.
It could be... But I know that my response was after the painting, which came in like 9 months later, when the painting was almost finished, I looked at it, and when it was done, I looked at it and I burst into tears, and I thought, I can never show this painting to anybody, because it was so terrifying to have something that I'd actually seen come into a painting. And I didn't even know how it got there, but it made me feel very, very out of step with normal reality, and I really wanted to be, a regular person, not seeing something that was beyond. That was at that time.
It's too late.
It's too late. I know. Here I am telling you the story.
No, but it's too late to be a normal person. It's like I think, and yeah.
Yeah, and there is no normal. That's what I finally understood. I understood I would spend time with the people that would seem the most normal. They were not normal. There isn't any normal, and it is not normal to deaden yourself. That man said he didn't see anything. To deaden yourself to reality all around you and just look through blinders, that's not normal either.
Right. It's not normal at all. And I think... And we can get into this other part of the conversation, that the artist is the shaman of our culture.
Yes, I think that's true.
I think that's the closest thing we have to shamans in our modern world, though, the artists.
Maybe through sound as well. I think that
sound... Oh, music.
Sound, I think there's a lot of ways that people usher in that shamanic power. I almost think that people, I don't know, I've been very admiring of a lot of ways that people embrace their energy, and I think that would be what a shaman really does, is embrace all energies and be fearless in the world. And also step between the worlds.
Well, that's what you've done with your paintings. They do seem like in-between worlds, a lot of these images. So you've stepped between the worlds.
Right.
The two worlds, as Rumi calls it. But you want to put together a whole thing with shamans and art and what you call tasting painting. Can you talk about that whole process that you're planning?
Well, this is an installation that came out of my teaching directly, and I've spent a lot of time teaching college students, and we would always go to museums as part of the drawing process so that they could draw from museum. The whole freshman class would go, and the other teachers would start to look with me. We'd always look at the reviews at the end of the semester, and my students were seeing things in the museums that the other students weren't seeing. And the teachers were saying, how are they doing this?
Like, what were they seeing that other people weren't seeing?
Well, they were able to draw really, really well. They were able to draw like very sophisticated artists instead
uh-huh.
of kind of like making a very small amount of progress in the course of a semester. The teachers would say, how come you always get the best students? And then I said, well, here are their first drawings. And then they'd say, what are you doing? What are you doing with them? But what the students were able to do was spend a lot of time on one object in the museum and just really, really draw it and see it and know it from every angle and side and kind of intuit it. And so they really could see art differently. And this show, Taste and Paint, is a way of seeing art through the eyes of the artist. For the museum visitor to go in and to open up in a way of embracing a part of themselves. And it actually originated a while ago. I had seen this show at the Museum of Natural History called The Art of Senegal. And when I looked at The Art of Senegal, it was such a wonderful show. And I thought, this is art that pulsates with life and vitality. I love this work. Why can't we have art like this from our Native American culture? I had studied anthropology before, so I was really aware of culture. So I was looking to see what was our modern 20th and 21st century art. And I found that a lot of it talks about our feelings of cynicism and loneliness and needing to be shocked into an awake state. A deadened feeling that only the newest would wake us, but it only lasts for a few minutes because it's not new anymore. Mm-hmm. And I thought there's more to us as people, and we have an ability that's much deeper, because I had seen with the students that many of the students would start off being very cynical, and then they could really, really get into a beautiful state of drawing. So this show, Tasting Paint, walks you through in a museum setting how you can look from the eyes of the artist. And I used my eyes because I know them the best. Mm-hmm. So you could, I separated them out to look like left and right parts of the brain. You could walk in on the left side and see explanations, written explanations about the work, and maybe layers of the paintings, and then you see the paintings. And you could go on the right side, left side of our brains are analytical and verbal and critical, and the right side doesn't have words, so that's why it's often not noticed. So you walk in on the right side, and there's a series of videos and headphones you put on from five different shamans that I think are just really wonderful openers to yourself. And so you're experiencing that. Then you go into a room with sound and maybe yogic breathing and quiet space that you can just kind of integrate the experiences that you've just had with the shamans. And then you go and see the paintings. And then you can keep going back and forth to left or right side to see what the difference is and experience it yourself. And you can see in an expanded state and just take in on a nonverbal level a deeper part of yourself.
So people have like this shamanic experience of experience reality with their right brain, or their whole brain, really, is what you're trying to get people.
Right. I think the whole brain is the clue, but but you can be a little top heavy on the right to to get you into the
right, because we've been so much the other way. But I think it's so important to know that that we're all artists, of course, but that the artist actually sees things, like you said, that other people don't see. You know, just that's there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think when they do see it and they can express it, it brings that awareness to the common culture.
Yes, I think so. And I think it brings back, this way many people can journey. I thought of going to a museum exhibit where you can journey to yourself like you would in the Art of Senegal exhibit, where you could look at sacred objects, totemic objects, and feel something. This is a way that you can feel again, and you don't have to have anybody lead you anywhere. You're going within yourself, and I find that's a more profound way that you could learn something about what you came here for, what your purpose is in life, what you remember. A lot of people remember things in dreams, and this is a little way of capturing that waking dream place.
So you're really using art as a way for people to connect back to their spiritual self.
Yes, definitely.
It's a sort of it's a spiritual act then, creating or painting or imagining even.
Mm-hmm.
You also told me something from that book about Jesus. What was the name of that book that you read?
Love Without End, Jesus Speaks by Green, I think it is. And it's a very interesting book. I later met somebody who knew this artist. And she is visited by Jesus, and she paints his portrait. And the book is very interesting because you can really see the difference when she has that italics when he's speaking and when she's speaking, and it's such a different voice.
And is this woman still around? Does she still paint?
She's in Texas. I never met her. I just met somebody who knew her when she lived in Texas, and it was such a shock that she knew her. But I found the book really a beautiful book because she would talk about the process. It was a very literal process of painting Jesus. And she wrote, and then Jesus wrote and talked to her the whole time.
Uh-huh. I think it might be true. I mean, I think Jesus is a being that can appear to people, and why not?
I love him. I'm speaking as a Jew. I just think he's wonderful.
I'm Jewish too, but I think that Jesus attained, he was a Jew, of course, but he attained a level of transcendence that as an example of anyone can do this.
Yes.
I mean, if we decided that we wanted to, but there was something that you said Jesus said in that book was about art specifically that I wanted to get a copy of, actually.
Okay, so would you like me to read a little bit of it?
Yeah, because I thought that was perfect for what the process you're going through and for what I'm trying to understand and understand the creative act and what that means. So, yeah, I would love to hear.
As intuition clears a pathway for unfolding consciousness, landmarks of beauty focus the growing consciousness upon constraints of reality, and then truth is perceived. Truth and beauty are both constants of the universe, one of revelation and the other of manifestation. In every new creation, an artist is a jungle of illusion, confusion, and trial expressions until a pattern of constancy appears before him. This is the image, sound, or concept to which his art and actions were giving birth. He recognizes the beauty before him, no less than a mother knows her child, even though an indifferent spectator might see nothing special at all. The artist has discovered a constant within the unfolding manifestation, and that is beautiful to him. Later, perhaps, it will be admired by others. You want me to read this?
No, but I just want to ask you about that, because what they're saying is if it's all truth and beauty, then what's not beautiful? What cannot not be beautiful?
Well, that's a part that's really good that he talks about here. It says, you've seen this cycle within the history of art. A form of beauty appears and focuses the direction of cultural growth. Eventually, it endures past its ability to inspire and excite emulation. Finally, it is perpetrated as an overly sweet, stale formula which decorates surfaces and makes the superficial aspects of life a little prettier or gaudier, as the case may be. Then suddenly, from an unexpected direction, fresh perceptions bring dramatic assertions of new aesthetic awareness. Like chicks hatching in springtime, innovative sensitivity breaks the veil of prevailing ideas and brings forth life to the subject of beauty. Often in the beginning, this is the part that refers to what you were just saying, Alan, in the beginning, such assertions are not perceived as beautiful because they are viewed through old preferences. What many people consider beautiful is the predictable splendor of prior conditions. However, those who guide and nurture the evolution of beauty know that its essence is actually the perception of living truth as an ongoing process of intuition.
An ongoing process of intuition. I like that.
Yeah.
So that's, but the other part in there is like, where do these new forms emerge from and how do they emerge? And are we emerging into a new form now somehow as our evolving culture?
I definitely think so, because he talks about a fresh perception from an unexpected direction, like chicks hatching in the springtime. And we're at a time when everything is breaking free of what has been. Our economics, our school, our religion, our government, everything.
So what does the new forms look like? What can you see on the horizon as this of a new form emerging?
Well, I've noticed in my paintings that a lot of the paintings had been about a journey. I have sticks that travel through the landscape, and the sticks seem to me to be like humans, every man. I noticed that it's almost like this huge explosion of energy has been happening in some of the most recent paintings. They're just like paintings that when you look at it, your heart just beats very fast. I don't have it on the website yet because I just painted them. But there's a way that the explosion, it's almost like these solar flares that are increasing from the sun. And I think that the energy breaks through in an entirely unexpected way. What you think might be disaster is an eruption to allow a new energy to form and to come through.
So you think we're definitely obviously it seems like we're definitely moving into a new time period of a new manifesting form, sort of the way, you know, the 1850s with Manet and that whole change in perception from classical Renaissance to like just this free form openness. And it seems like we're something like that's emerging in the psyche.
And what I notice is that these are paintings that actually have a feeling, and that seems to be something new, that there's an emotional throbbing feeling that you feel when you look at the paintings. And that, to me, is a new form. I had this really interesting dream. Do you want me to tell you?
Yes, please.
Okay. I had this dream of, I relived every moment of my life over the course of 3 days during this summer full moon a number of years ago. And at the end of the dream, everything was the same as from the moment that I had learned to draw and expand and every single class I went to, except at the very end there was a show that I was in where there were winners and losers. Mm. And this was a show that I actually had been in and I hadn't. Oh, and when I was there, everybody was lined up and they said, okay, all the winners will now go over to the MFA. And I said to the gallery director, excuse me, I was supposed to win. And she said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you expected to win. And she waved her hands over my paintings, and they looked exactly the same, except they had no feeling to them. They were just paintings. And And so the other people said, come on, let's go. This finest chef from France is coming over to give us our food, which I love to eat. And so, and I looked at them and they said, and I didn't move, and they said, come on, Sloat, let's go. They're having, these paintings are going to the Met, and, then they're going on to the Tate and, you know, Pompidou.
Right.
And then I looked at him and I thought, they don't know, my paintings have changed. And then the last thing they said, come on over, everybody, your parents are coming. and they're going to be so proud of you. And I thought, oh my God. I turned to the gallery director and I said to her, put them back. I didn't realize that I had already won. And at that moment, I just had this incredible ecstatic experience. And I woke up and just with all this joy flooding my body, because I realized that what was right about the paintings was the fact that they had so much feeling in them, and that I could not ever ignore the fact that feeling was something that needed to go into my paintings. And I think that that's what's happening with art. I think that a lot of people have feeling in their work, but they haven't been able to go in that direction of feeling, because it hasn't been what has been wanted in the art world. And now I think that's changing.
I think it is changing. I think that is the new paradigm. The paradigm of feeling is, I think, the reason ultimately there is art. So the artist can give us a new sense of what's feeling, what it is to feel.
Right.
And you're putting it in those paintings because you're coming at it from this other place, it seems, you know, this whole other level of consciousness, feeling level.
This feeling level, it's just right, and that you just kind of fall into a place of almost opening up yourself to your wider self when you see them.
Uh-huh. And well, isn't there feeling in everything anybody does? Isn't there all?
Definitely, yeah. But I think what happens is that a lot of the feeling gets channeled through the intellect, and I think that there becomes a kind of a conceptual idea of moving in a certain direction intellectually, fitting in with a paradigm of what we're accomplishing at this stage, what has been related to what's going around the world right at this moment. And it seems to be a different focal point. My focal point is that we are human beings linked in. We're human beings connected with the earth and connected with everybody on the earth all at the same moment. And that what comes into our feeling state is so huge that you just can't put any words onto it. You just have to experience.
Well, that's the other part of the paradigm, is that we are becoming these connected beings that are living in this greater awareness of each other and a greater reality. I think that's
definitely
what's unfolding. Well, thank you for sharing your ideas and opinions and, you know, your art and your meditation. Your website is Sloat Shaw, SLOATSHAW.com.
Yes.
And you're a teacher where?
I'm teaching right now in my studio in Brookline, Massachusetts. And the other places aren't open to the public yet. But that's where I teach.
But the best way to get in touch with you is through your website.
Slotshaw.com, yes.
Well, and do you know when your taste paint exhibit with the shamans might happen?
I don't. I'm looking forward to having that happen someplace soon and wonderful.
Right, but I guess the best thing is that people have to experience your art and see it, and, you know, and this has just been a taste of what they might expect, right?
Yes, definitely, because they're much much more evocative in person than on the website. But the website is a good taste to start with.
side, and you were talking about them as less of a taste than than seeing them, because there is. So you're saying in person, that reproductions do not match the energy of what it's like in person.
No. Diane Waldman, the director of the Guggenheim, had said that she'd given them a painting prize, and she said every time she looked at them, she saw something new, and she couldn't stop looking at them.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you, Sloat, for sharing all this. And hopefully I'll meet you, and we'll do an interview on television.
I look forward to that, Alan.
Thank you for being a guest on New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and if you want to reach me at newrealities@earthlink.net, and also check out my website, newrealities.com, where there's a whole section on art and creativity. And I'll be talking to other artists about their work and their vision, and I do think art is really the way we change. So, any final words from you, Sloat?
I just really enjoy talking to you. It's just wonderful to expand in words as well as in paint. So, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's all about the creative expression.
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, I'm going to end with this song.